No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world, and today we're in here with the one and only L.A. street legend, Baldacci, in the building.
Much love, man. Thank you guys for having us here. We appreciate it.
Oh, no, I'm excited to have you on here. You got a very interesting story. We met in the back of the store a couple of years ago. Why were you there? Who'd you pull up with? I forget.
I was there with China Mac.
Right,
when he came to do his interview with you.
Okay, yeah. That's dope. Hell yeah.
It's crazy, man. That's how the world works. You know what I mean? It's just doors open and... It's a blessing.
Definitely. And I kept seeing you on, because I did the Mr. Cartoon interview and then more recently did the Esteban Oriol interview. And you've fucked with both of them over the years and stuff.
Yeah, those are my bros right there. Esteban Oriol's been, you know, like a big blessing to myself and my camp and just everybody that's been part of everything we're doing. Esteban brings me along for a lot of stuff, man. You know what I mean? Shout out to Esteban for sure.
That's what's up. You feel like you're kind of like his muse? Like he's always looking for something shocking to take photos of, and you're kind of like shocking by nature with the face tattoos?
And it's crazy because before I even met Esteban, like I had all these photographers hitting me up to take pictures of me, and you know, they were doing their thing, and a lot of them, more than one, mentioned to me, like, hey, you know what? Let us get our pictures out the way before Esteban gets to you. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I didn't get it, you know? They were like, oh, you know, the big dog's going to come look for you soon, promise you. And out of nowhere, he hit me up, and I was on an ankle monitor. I was finishing up some probation time. I had an ankle bracelet, and he hit me up and was like, hey, you mind me coming to your pad? Because I told him I can't leave. So he's like, I'll come to your pad, take some pictures of you. And I was like, man, let's get it. So he came. After that, it was a wrap, bro. We clicked and took off since then, you know?
Yeah, when I look at his career, it's just kind of amazing to me that he's somebody who, like, nowadays everybody knows, like, to make content, to film videos for YouTube, to take photos for Instagram. Everybody's on that because you got a phone in your pocket. Everybody can do that. But he's somebody that even in the 90s and shit was, like, mega early on being a fire photographer and then also realizing the value of being on tour with these dudes and actually capturing that, not to mention like the actual LA street culture on top of him just being on tour and everything. So he saw the future like many, many years ago. So we owe him a very big debt, you know?
For sure. It's a trip. When I see his pictures, it's like I know they're his pictures without even knowing. Like it's insane. I'll see a picture and be like, Stefan took that, you know? Because it's like, it's classic, bro. He got it.
It's a stamp in a way because you just met Duno for the first time. And when I was looking through Duno's page, I saw that he had been shot by Esteban. And I'm like, there's a cosign right there.
It's like a pyramid. Everything just ends up, you know, connecting somehow. You know, everybody's shooting for the stars and everybody's going the same way. You know what I mean? Especially, you know, there's people that are doing a little bit more than others. But at the same time, you just never know who you run into, who you see. Like,
yeah.
You know,
definitely. So early days of you, let's talk about where you're from and what your very early years were like.
Right. I'm from South LA, from Florence Community, Florence District.
Yeah.
Born and raised, basically. I was born in Inglewood, California, and took from the hospital straight to the street where I was basically raised on. It's called Converse Avenue. That's why I got the Converse sign right there, you know, because I'm an all-star from that block. So
I definitely
had to get that. A couple of us have the stamp, you know what I mean? But early age, you know, I tried the whole school thing, and I mean it went well for me. I would say, but at an early age, you know, I started hanging out with a different crowd and, you know, getting introduced to a different lifestyle, which was a gang lifestyle. You know what I'm saying?
And so was that front and center in front of your eyes, like growing up the whole time? Like you always knew about this shit?
Yeah, definitely. Because my dad, he's rest in peace now, but he was from Florence, so you know what I mean? Like we were. Not like he tried to introduce us to us, but it was there in our face and there was nothing really he could do about it. You know what I mean? Most of the time he was gone in prison, you know what I mean? So my mom, she tried her best to take care of us, like, and keep us on the right track. But it was just, you know, my older brother and then my sister, like, we were all part of, you know, we were all involved in it. We had our hands in the cookie jar and everybody wanted to be like my dad.
But when you say hands in the cookie jar, do you mean that you were just trying to be like it was just your identity, or you just wanted to be around all the shit that was going on, or was there actual, like, you know, money being made and shit that you were involved with from a young age?
No, I mean like what I mean by that is that, so if we wanted to not get jumped into like our gang, it seemed like we didn't have to. You know what I'm saying? Because we had those family ties like that already. If we wanted to just sit back and be a normal person in that neighborhood, we still would have had the same amount of love and respect
really
that we did, but we ended up choosing to, you know what I mean?
So because your dad was known like that, you could have like really just been a good kid and go to college and shit.
And, yeah, and been cool, you know what I mean? Because my pops has so much love. Like, everybody fucked with my dad heavy. Like, they love my dad a lot, you know? Wow. So, but we, you know, we chose to still, you know, be part of what we did. And it's like, I mean, now it's different. It's a lot better now, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm not out there living the way I used to live when I was a kid, you know what I mean? Now right. I'm doing more positive stuff in the environment and trying to get, you know, noticed in a different way. Back then I was trying to get noticed in a certain way. Now it's a different way that I'm working on getting this recognition, you know?
Definitely, but it's like when you put yourself in your dad's shoes at that time, it's weird because it's like, you know, him and all the guys that he's around are all part of this life and they've all accepted that they want to be like this. And I'm sure that, like, to some extent, you know, your dad wants to hold you to that standard and see you sort of, like, take on the tradition that he took on. But then at the same time, you want a better life for your kids. Like, you want your kids to maybe be able to have something different. How did you feel like your dad thought of that for you? Do you think that he really wanted to keep you away from that stuff, or did he just sort of accept at a certain point?
It's kind of hard to say because, I mean, like I said, he was really gone a lot of the time of my life. So our only communication really was through, like, letters. You know what I mean? He would send letters home. But he would definitely get on my case in those letters. You know what I mean? Like, you better be listening to your mom. You better be... You know what I mean? He would definitely try to put me in the right place when it came to, like, my lifestyle. And I think just at a certain time, he kind of realized already, like, okay, it's a little too late for me to try to pull him out of this water. You know what I mean? He's right. Already in that water.
But,
like,
then,
you know?
But then does he sort of take on, like, a leader role telling you about how shit is and stuff? Or does he more let the...
He schooled us since we were little kids. Like, he basically would, you know, lace us up and kind of give us, you know, the rundown on how... No, things should be like how you should live your life and go about without getting yourself in trouble, without, you know, crossing certain lines that you shouldn't, or just stuff like that. That I feel like at the same time, whether he's putting it out there for us, but it's knowledge. You know what I mean? It's stuff that got me through life. You know what I mean? It's stuff that helped me walk that straight line and kind of never get myself in trouble. Yeah, trouble. I mean, I've been in the system. I've done time. Like. All that, but you get through the system a certain way if you followed certain rules, like, and everything, you know, is put there for a reason. Like, we didn't make these rules, you know what I mean? This is just stuff that you have to abide by. So my pops schooled me the right way. I really can't say that he encouraged me and said, hey, you gotta go be from a gang or you gotta do this. He never did none of that. But at the same time, he prepared me for prison. He prepared me for the system, and he kind of schooled me, like I said, and gave me the right tools to get by on a good stay.
What was he in and out for? Like, what was he, like, getting caught up for robberies, or
was
it
his,
like,
thing?
Really?
My pops used to get busted for robberies growing, you know, I guess when he was younger, and that was his thing, you know. He was bad, bro. Like, my pops was a bad motherfucker, and that, you know, my heart goes out, cuz he's gone and he ain't able to hear or see, like, the progress and, you know, everything that I've got accomplished now. Like, before he died in 2013, so, you know, I was already starting my journey. It wasn't where I'm at now, but he got to see and he got to hear some of the music, and he was just, you know, he was really proud of me. So I could imagine how he'd be now, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but did you grow up with, like, a natural sort of, like my dad did a year in prison when I was 12, and I remember the effect it had on me. It made me really, really angry towards the system and towards, like, you know, just the idea, because I didn't believe that he was guilty, and I felt like the whole thing was so unfair, and it really, like, filled me with a lot of rage at that age in particular. Right. You know, you're 12, 13 years old, you're going through puberty for the first time and shit. Like, did you feel anger as a result of your dad not being with you because of that?
Yeah, I kind of did, you know what I mean? Because it was like, I felt like we could only see him on a certain day of the week for only for 15 minutes behind the glass type shit. This is when he's in the county jail, and my mom would take me to go visit him. And then, like, you know, seeing those guards come in and tell you, like, that's it, hang up the phone. And it's like, you know, he's trying to get the last words to tell you, I love you or be cool. And they cut these phones
off. They're treating
off,
him like an animal.
Right.
And it's weird for you to see your dad being treated like that. Like, right. You're used to your dad being the big man that right. calls the shots. You
and
know?
It hurts. It's like, yeah. Man, come on now. Like, you know, you guys got him in a cage. Whatever it is he did wrong, I understand. You know what I mean? But, I mean, we all pay by doing time or doing whatever, you know, repercussions that we have. But at the end of the day, let's do it fairly. You know what I mean? Like, and I felt like at that time, especially me being that age, I didn't really understand the whole, you only really have 15 minutes to talk on the phone. You know what I mean? Right. Now, I mean, growing up, I had to learn that because I had to be in the same position. Now I'm on the other side of the glass getting visits from other people, you know, outside, and they're telling me, oh, you got to hang up the phone. It's been 15 minutes type shit. Now I'm seeing like, oh, this is what it is, you know?
Right. So when you were attracted to actually being put on with the gang and everything, it's like, you know, one thing I've been thinking about a bit is how, like, all over the world, there's like different gangs, like different states, but there's like different norms of what being in a gang is, where you have some areas where, like, in Brooklyn and shit right now, like, when I read about all the gang shit going on there, it seems like it's primarily like these gangs basically exist to beef with each other. Like, right. It's not like, oh, like, we have a gang because we are selling drugs in this area and we need to, like, look out for each other and shit. Like, there's different, like, norms of what being from somewhere is. What was, like, your perspective on it when you were growing up? Like, what was it for you to be down?
Man, it was crazy because, you know, me being young at the age that you still really ain't fully developed in your mind. And, you know, joining, you know, my gang where I'm from, Florence, you know, at that time, still to this day, like, it's crazy. Like, a lot of people don't like us. You know what I mean? For whatever the reason be, years and years of history, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, it's like, I chose to join this. I know so many people don't like us, don't appreciate us, and probably don't respect us because of whatever it is, you know what I mean? But that's something that you chose to take on, you know what I mean? Me being a kid, I didn't think about it like that until, you know, I started hitting the system and going to juvenile hall, and juvenile hall is where it's at, you know what I mean? Like, you're sitting in there fighting the world, especially if you're from somewhere where they don't like, you know what I mean?
It's right, like if you weren't turned out already, once you're in juvenile hall, that's where you're just around a bunch of bad kids.
You learn, if you can't fight, you're going to learn to fight. You know what I mean? Because people are coming to your door trying to take your your tennis shoes, trying to just to test you, bro. You know what I mean? You'll wake up, you know, get up, about to brush your teeth and wash your face, and right there they make you leave your shoes and your pair of pants outside the door so you don't try to escape or whatnot. You leave all that stuff outside your door, so... You know, some people will wake up and come outside and see their pair of shoes missing and then see a bigger dude walking to go eat breakfast in them. And you're like, what the fuck? You know, like, that's how it will get. Like, you know, it didn't happen to me, but I did see it happen a lot. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you just gotta respond, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? You got to protect yourself. You got to protect your you know, your reputation, especially, like, you know, you're young and you don't want to be, you know, labeled as that punk in there. That's for sure, bro, because right. it'll continue. You know what I'm saying? And then you got different races, different people just taking your shit, like, and it's over for you after that.
And then you're, like, socialized to all of a sudden understand that extreme violence is the only way that you're going to be able to survive in this environment with your respect, right?
Yeah, fighting, bro. Like, that's how I was taught. Like, you know, like, not even say, I can't even say I was taught. That's just something that I picked up on in there. Like, it's you or them, bro. You better fight back. You know what I mean? So I ended up, you know, in the box or whatnot a lot growing up. So
what was the first time you actually got in trouble and have to go to juvenile hall, though? What kind of stuff were you getting into?
Man, it's crazy because I was 13 years old, and I ended up getting arrested for 3 stolen cars in the same day.
So that was your hustle at the time. You were taking people's cars.
We used to take them to drive around, bro. We weren't even selling shit, doing nothing. We just take them, drive them around for a little bit, park them, and then let them find their car. We wouldn't even damage the car, bro.
That's like the definition of just a bad kid crime, you know?
We were bad, bro. I ain't gonna sit here and lie. And it was funny because, you know, the first time they arrested me for that, you know, they called my mom, basically, and release me to her custody, you know, here, get your kid out of here, you know, type shit. And the second time was like I explained it in another interview that I did, it's like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, the way that happened. Like, lunchtime, got busted for another stolen vehicle.
So you got arrested, got let out, and you were like...
3 times.
You've learned nothing. You were like, let's go do it again.
The same day, bro. Like, it was insane.
Why was your luck so bad that day?
I don't know, man. It was crazy. But I felt like, I think it was just time for me to go to juvenile hall and kind of get the experience out the way. Time for me to go learn, because... I was, you know, I was a nonstop train at the time, man. I was just going, you know what I mean? And it was like, you're either going to get arrested, you're going to end up dead, or, you know what I'm saying? Who knows what's going to happen?
Do you think that subconsciously you kind of wanted to get locked up so you could really see what this is about?
I honestly do. I really feel like when I was that age that, because, you know, growing up, we watched movies and we've been told by, you know, other individuals, oh, this and this and this happens in juvenile hall. So at the same time, I was like, I mean, not that I didn't believe it, but I was like, man, like, where does, you know, you being a G fall in? Like, if you a G, they ain't going to take your shoes.
Right.
If you a G, they ain't going to slap you around. They ain't going to do all this stuff that you see on the movies. That ain't going to happen to you. You know what I mean? If you're a real one and you're going to go in there and represent, like, that's not going to happen. So, I mean, at the same time, I took the fall going to jail for these stolen cars, and that was my time to learn, and I did, you know? I did. I got to see that half of the stuff they say about all this stuff that's going on doesn't happen in juvenile hall. You know, they saying, oh, these people are fucking raping motherfuckers. Like, that wasn't going down. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, at least I didn't see none of that shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, the whole getting your kicks took in, the whole, you know, fighting against people you don't get along with on the streets, all that.
Was it mostly like about who you were getting along with on the streets? And were you, was it primarily, is it become racialized there, or is it still more about who's from where?
Yeah, juvenile is different than, you know, the adult system, because juvenile, they put you with whoever, you know what I mean? They sell you whoever your name lands with next to, that's who's going to be your bunkie, you know what I mean? And it's like, it doesn't matter your race, doesn't matter your age-wise, they did kind of separate us. They had some, you know, 13 and 14 year olds in one unit, and then another unit you got the 15, 16, and 17. It went like that. And then the matter also of, like, if you had like carjacks, murders, if you had like a heavy case, they had a unit for like older dudes that were busted for more serious crimes and shit like that, you know? And yeah, like, they kind of, so it's more of what you're doing on the streets and where you're from, bro. You know what I mean?
I feel you. So, okay, how long do you do then? And then, like, what, you get out and you just end up getting locked up over and over?
I actually didn't do a long time for these three stolen cars. So the first two times they released me to the custody of my parents, well, to my mom. The third time they told me, you know what, don't even call your mom. Like, you good, you're going to jail. Like, So I went, and I want to say I only stayed in there for, like, maybe a month and a half, maybe 2 months, and I ended up getting like a DA reject. I guess that's when the court don't even pick up your case or whatnot. They just throw it out.
Such a common crime.
Yeah, because I think,
and
yeah,
you're so
that
young.
And I was a kid, you know what I mean? They were just like, man, okay, just let them, that little month in jail should be enough to shake them up, you know what I mean? So whatever, they let me go. But I came home and, you know, shit just started escalating, bro. Things just got a little more enhanced. I went back to juvenile hall, like, a little bit after. I wasn't even home for too much longer, and now I caught some real cases. You know, I went to jail for carjack, kidnap, strong arm robbery.
How'd that go down?
That was crazy, bro. That was like some made up shit, actually, bro. This family that, you know, had it out for me, you know what I'm saying? Like, and just basically, you know, put me in jail, bro. And I didn't actually even do the things that these people, you know, were saying that I did.
So, like, it was, you like, know, your enemy's family that basically,
nah,
like, just.
It was just a kid out there, bro, that, you know, a lot of people messed with, fucked with, punked, you know what I mean? And I, honestly, what's funny about it is that I would see him, you know, certain liquor stores and just different stuff. And I would, you know, I knew him, like, just from seeing him around. And I would back him up, bro. I would tell some people when I see them messing with him, like, hey, just leave this fool alone, like, little kid, you know what I mean? Whatever. Well, he just, I don't know what took place in his mind. I actually caught him, you know, messing with some people's property or whatever, like, in my area. And I kind of went over there and told him, like, hey, bro, look at this. This is why people mess with you. Don't mess with people's shit.
Okay.
Leave that shit alone. The next day, I was in jail for carjack, kidnap, and strong-arm robbery.
What the fuck? But they didn't have no evidence or nothing?
Nothing. But I was a gang member. I had tattoos on my face.
Oh, you already, what age did you start doing that?
I got my F-13 on my chin when I was like 13, going on 14.
Holy shit, you didn't know anybody else was 13 getting tattoos on their face,
nah,
right?
Man,
and how old are you now? What year was this?
I'm 38 now. I'm about to be 39 on Saturday, okay, on February 13th.
Well, 13-year-olds did not have face tattoos in
right.
97 or whatever.
Rare. Yeah, it was rare. And you know, my homies, they tend to do that. They tend to write on their face at a young age. We learned, you know, young at that kind of shit, so I had that tattoo on my face. So basically, I got a court. I had ended up getting a lawyer. You know what I mean? Because it was like, they were offering me 21 years. That was my deal. So I was like, nah, I need to get an attorney. So my mom, you know, begged, borrowed, and stole to get money to get me an attorney. They got me an attorney. The attorney came and told me straight up. He's like, look, bro, I don't believe you did this shit. I told him, look, I don't even know how to drive. So I don't know how I can carjack somebody, first of all.
Right.
And they mentioned some shit like chloroform and that I pulled a pistol and took like a dollar from the kid. Like, it was crazy.
They would have to have so much evidence to actually
they
prove
had
this, right?
Zero. The only thing they had was the kid and his mother.
Right.
So he must have went home and, you know, cried to his mother and basically, hey, you know what? Help me out here, mom. This is this and that. So moms went to bat for him. Moms was like, I had never seen moms in my life. You know, but she was there ready to go testify against me, bro. Like, right. It was insane. But basically, my attorney told me, you're a gang member. You dropped out of school. He's a kid that goes to school, gets good grades. Like, who do you think they're going to believe?
Yeah.
So he scared the shit out of me. You know what I mean? He was like, look, you know, I'm trying to give you 21 years for this shit. Like, you really got to think about this. Maybe you might want to say, okay, I did the robbery, but I didn't do this and this and this and that.
Uh-huh.
He's like, so they could give you a certain amount of time and not 21 years.
Right.
You know? And I had already been in the system for a little bit, so I kind of was learning, like how it worked, you know what I mean? So I was just like, man, like, I don't know. I didn't know what to do. I was a kid, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I'm going to leave it in your hands. You tell me what you think I should do to the attorney. He's like, look, man, take a robbery. I'll get you to go to juvenile camp. You'll probably be there for about a year.
Right.
I told him, let's go.
Was there part of you that wanted to make something happen to this kid?
I mean,
was that even on the agenda of like possible things that you would have done at that time?
After that, I was just like, man, like, just the amount of trouble you can actually get me in just by saying some shit. Like, I was like, bro, I don't even want to see your face. Like, I'm going to stay as far as I can from this kid. Because they're like, I know damn well I ain't never done nothing to this person.
You know it's crazy, I mean? Too, because it's like in the areas like this, there's a huge stigma against snitching.
Right,
especially for something that didn't even happen. I mean,
that's how it works, man. And, you know, it's like, honestly, I had nothing else to ever do or say or anything about the kid. Like, I just, you know, left it alone. They were, you know, they had even put like some shit on, like, oh, if anything happens to him or you run into him or anything, like, we're coming after you, basically. So I left it alone, bro. I was like, you know what? It is what it is. You know what? Maybe, you know, it happened for a reason. I went to jail and I learned what I had to do and how I keep moving. And you know what I mean? Like, it's all a lesson. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I look at it as just as a lesson.
Right. But so this was all like the local juvenile jail shit? This wasn't prison yet?
No, this was juvenile. And, you know, I got out. And the thing is, so I was supposed to just be gone for a year. I actually was in there a little bit longer because of fights and just stuff that carried out my time and gave me more time, little small stuff.
Right.
And then I came home when I was about 17 years old, you know? I came home. When I turned 18, I got shot 5 times with an AK-47.
Right. And okay, so how did that happen? Where were you?
I was at the wrong place at the wrong time, bro. That's all it was.
Really?
Yeah, I was at the wrong place at the wrong time. Honestly, it's not, there's not really much that I could even say because it was a blur.
Right.
Like, I woke up 2 months later. You know what I mean? A month and a half, I was in a coma.
Right. So where were you standing, though?
I was in a car.
It was a drive-by?
Man, it's... Nah, it wasn't, you know, we got walked up on and shot at, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was rough, you know what I mean? But, man, I'm here, bro, and that's what counts, you know what I mean? I'm still breathing, I'm talking, I'm not in a wheelchair, I'm not, you know?
Yeah.
I'm here.
That, man, though, that right there must have really changed everything. You haven't even hit 18, you can't even buy a pack of cigarettes yet, and you getting, like really this story in general, I'm sure you were, like, you know, putting yourself in situations and stuff, but a lot of this sounds like just really bad luck. Like, you know, like, even getting shot like that in this situation, the fucking false narrative that this kid came up with about you and shit like that. You know, I always think about that, how, like, you know, we all know people who, like, drove drunk once and got caught, and we all know people who drove drunk 100,000 times and they never got caught.
Going,
it's like a lot of shit. But then it compounds upon itself because the more that you get arrested, the more that you're in prison and you're around all these kids and you're fucking learning shit and figuring out how shit really is. And it's taking you further and further away from being able to be a person with a job. Did you even have an idea of what you wanted to be in your life at that point besides just from the hood?
Yeah. I mean, I always liked music, like, since I was a young kid. Music was just my outlet, you know what I mean? Like, if I sat there and listened to some stuff on some headphones, or if we'd be at parties listening to music always just caught my attention. And I knew that I wanted to do music, but I just never took it serious because I was still out there hanging out. You know what I mean?
And you didn't know anybody who was in the music industry?
Not like that. You know, there was some people in my neighborhood that you know, they did music here and there, but they wouldn't even look our way. Like, it was like, okay, little kids, you know? But now they see us and they're like, oh, shit, you're doing the damn thing now. Like, but it happens like that. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's like you got to pay attention to those little guys. You know what I mean? Like, I know I do. When little dudes hit me up like, hey, check out my music, I'll go check them out, bro, because I'm not cocky like that where it's like, oh, no, I can't check you out. You know what I mean? Like, what's going to take me a couple minutes to go and listen to whatever it is? I mean, I ain't going to lie. If I listen to something and it's, like, not what I'm expecting, then I'll get up out of there. Like, oh, okay, cool.
Right.
You know, but there's something to catch my attention, and I'm like, okay, little kids, you know, he's hungry for this. You know what I mean? And so my music just, like, it formed on itself. Like, I started writing only because I would go, when I was younger, to, like, my neighborhood parties and rap. And, you know, I would see the people dancing to this shit. And I'm like, I'm sitting there like, damn, they're actually feeling this music. Like, it's something that I'm doing for a hobby. But they're getting their boogie onto it. So I'm like, okay, it must be something that's there. You know what I mean?
What,
like,
was the dope shit to you at that time, though? The shit that made you love hip-hop? And was it only hip-hop, or were you fucking with other shit as well?
I pretty much listened to everything. But I think when I started listening to everything was when I grew up a little bit more, being in the system. Because, you know, sometimes they send you far away where you can't get no radio stations. So the only radio stations you get are playing these chick songs or these other stupid songs.
But you listen to some country and shit?
Everything. Yeah. Like, everything that comes through that you can listen to, it's like, okay, I like this. This bumps. You know what I mean?
That's interesting that kind of turned you on to shit you never would have heard otherwise.
Never, bro. Mm-hmm. I would have never even ever thought of listening to any of that music until I was sent places where that's all I can listen to, you know? Mm-hmm. Once in a while, you'll hear a rap song come out, and you're like, oh, shit, you know? But yeah, it was mainly rap growing up. Like, that's all I really listened to was, like, you know, the old
big artists or, like, local LA dudes that you were looking at.
I think I did a little bit of both. Like, I would, you know, listen to, like, Tupac, Too Short, Eazy-E, like, those artists. But I did have, like, a local selection of certain artists that I'll be like, okay, I like dudes' music, you know? It was a couple of, you know, people, like, from San Diego, like Mr. Shadow, and you know what I mean? Certain different ones. There was different artists that I would actually sit there and be like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, I could listen to this.
It was a lot harder to get your shit out there if you were an unsigned underground rapper back then. It was kind of like you had to get a label behind you because people really found out about music from MTV and the radio.
And now they got social media to do it for them.
Now you can be like the coolest rapper from some neighborhood in LA and you got 100,000 followers and there's 100,000 people that know all about you, but nobody else knows who the fuck you are outside of the little LA bubble.
That's the struggle, man. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's crazy. It's just, that's why we just keep pushing and keep striving to get to the next level, you know?
Definitely. Okay, so you're writing raps, like, while you're in prison and stuff, too? Are you really kind of, like, still thinking about this idea as you're locked up and everything?
Yeah, because at the same time, you know, we got a lot of free time on our hands. You know, you get locked down or whatnot, you got to stay in your cell, you know? Only thing to do, basically, in there is either work out, you know, bird bath, take a shower, basically, with your sink right there that you got, you know what I mean?
That's got to be a challenge.
Yeah, it's a little mess. You got to learn how to do it. You got to learn how to roll up your towels a certain way so the water don't fly off into the tier, you know what I mean? You just roll them up a certain way. Some cells are different, just depending on, like, you know, the way they're angled or they're lopsided a little bit. You just got to find out where the water pushes when you're showering, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I was writing raps while I was on lockdown, and just I kept on. I got stacks and stacks of music that I still haven't recorded out here to today. Like, because once I got out and I had a phone and I learned how to use the notes, then it was like, okay, I don't need this pen and paper no more. Like, I could use this, you know what I mean? But I still have stacks and stacks of music that I wrote while being down. And all of that I feel is going to come into play. You know what I mean? All of that, because that's a certain time of my life. That's on paper. That's, you know, what's going on with me at the time, at the moment.
And you held on to all of it? Were you sending it back home, or you just have notebooks in prison?
I walked home when I got out of the joint. I came
home.
You had
to walk home?
Duffel bag. No, I got a gate pickup. You know, family came to pick me up. But when I walked out with, like, these duffel bags that they have for, like, workout bags full of music.
Really?
Two of them. You know what I mean? Like, it was just notebook after notebook after notebook full. Some of them I'll go and read and I'll be like, damn, I wasn't even making sense this day. Like, what was I, you know, but it's there. And there's some parts where I'm like, oh, that's what I meant. You know what I mean? I go over it and I'm like, and a lot of it's like scribbled down paper, but I trip out because, you know, an older dude once told me he passed by me and I had a bunch of, like, I was working on a song, but I had scratches throughout the whole page. Uh-huh. And he walked by and seen it, and he's like, hey, I don't mean to be in your business, but you caught my eye with all those scribbles up, you know? And I was like, oh, no, I'm just writing some music. And he said, a real artist scratches everything out and goes back and corrects itself. So he's like, I see what you're doing, and that's what you're supposed to do. Like, so from then, it's like, I just kept on, because I just kept getting signs, bro. Like, I felt like there was signs from the universe or wherever you want to say these signs came from, but they kept telling me to keep going and don't stop. And that's where I'm at.
Wow. You know? That's dope. It's crazy. Yeah, because, I mean, it's got to be hard to be motivated to write a verse when you haven't even heard a fucking beat in 2 weeks, never mind, like, ever. Like, you know, like, right. I'm sure there's a bunch of people who, like, rap in prison and stuff, but it's not like that experience sitting in the studio with a beat playing over and over, right, that easily allows you to sort of think about how you want to rap on the track, yeah, or whatever.
And that's so crazy, because my mind got so used to a certain tempo in my head that I was like, you know what? This is my BPM. This is the time. This is how fast I got to rap on this beat. Like, I just played these own my own beats in my head, and I was able to write, you know? And then we also had a band room. I was in the feds, too. I've been in the feds and in the state. But when I was in the feds, we had a band room where we would go and we had, like, the Chronic 2001 CD, like, the beats, you know what I mean? It was instrumentals.
Really?
And we wrote and rapped over those beats. Like, you would hear, everybody had, like, 10 songs to every different beat in there, because it was, like, 6 of us that actually kept that band room, like, live, you know? And each of us had, like, 10 different songs written to every beat on the Chronic 2001, like, but still, that's cool because you could come home and put that on another beat.
Right.
You know what I mean? That was just us having fun and, you know, doing what we wanted to do with the music.
And just getting to practice. Because I think that when I look at rappers, even rappers that people don't consider, like, lyrical or whatever, like, if you make a song, if you make one song, right, this shit probably going to suck. If you make 1,000 songs, the 1,000th song could suck, but chances are you're going to keep getting better. It's like, yeah, anything else. If you just keep doing it over and over, you're going to get better. Or you weren't meant to do this in the first place.
Right. That's what I tell my homies. That, you know, I got younger homies that always hit me up like, hey, you know what? I want to get into the music. Like, what do you got any kind of, like, advice for me? And I just always tell them, look, bro, you can't get no worse. Mm. You're only going to get better. So just keep with it. Don't give up on it. You know what I mean? That's the main thing, is not giving up. Because I've seen so many, you know, throughout my years that, you know, kind of give up on whatever it is that they're shooting for. And it's like, I understand. It feels like it's never going to pay off. You know what I mean? It really does. It's like, we're tired. You know what I mean? We're tired of running at this dream that feels like it's never going to be there. You know what I mean? But I just feel like there's, you know, there is something out there, and that's my reason that I haven't quit. And I feel like every day I do something productive or I make something happen that encourages me to not stop.
Definitely. Know? So that time that you were locked up, though, then you come home for a little bit and then you catch this Fed case? Is that basically how it worked?
Well, I went and did like close to 6 years in the in state prison. Mm-hmm. After I came home from doing 6 years, I got out. I was out for like 2.5 years. But the only reason I was out for 2.5 years, because we were already being, you know, watched or whatever and shit. And I ended up getting caught up, bro.
And just, you knew that? Were you like,
nah,
phone
we didn't,
tapped
we didn't
and shit
know.
Like
yeah,
that?
They had, like, you know, phone taps, fucking shit like that. You know what I mean? And it I came home and just walked basically into an indictment, bro. Like, ended up going to jail, you know.
Were you coming home thinking, I'm gonna stay out of trouble and I'm gonna change my life now, and I'm, or was that even an option to you?
Nah, that time when I was still, I had barely turned, so I went to jail when I was 18 and I got out when I was gonna be 24 or something like that. So I was still young. I already knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to get home and party and turn up, you know what I mean? And I did, and that was basically the wrong move, because, you know, we were already having, you know, problems on our hands. So I ended up catching this beef and ended up getting sent to the feds for, like, conspiracy, you know.
And didn't you not really even do anything that significant in this time that you got arrested? Wasn't it just, like, a phone call you had with some girl or some shit?
No, well, like, you mean, like, when I went to feds?
Yeah.
Feds, it was just,
as part of this conspiracy case. They didn't have anything crazy on you, right?
Nothing at all, bro, really, to be honest with you. I mean, they had calls where they would say, oh, you know, he's talking about such and such narcotics or whatnot. I was partying, bro.
Right. You know what I mean? I'm partying some drugs. Like, I was chilling. That's different,
you know,
right?
I mean, yeah, I was chilling, bro. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, you know what I mean? I had to roll with the punches like I've been doing since I was a kid. Like, I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm not going to cry over spilled milk. Mm. Not going to tell on nobody. So that's, you know what I mean? That's part of the game. You got to roll with the punches. And I did.
Have you been in that situation of having a cop sitting across from you saying, tell us this, this, and this, and you get to go outside today?
That's happened forever. They always attempt. You know what I mean? It's like, bro, you got to look at me and kind of figure that, you know, you got to go to the next door or something. Go ask the next guy.
Yeah, what's your actual reaction? Like, what do you actually say when they're trying to put you on the spot?
What's
like,
funny?
Just like, it's not happening. Come on.
I had an attorney, and that was his thing. Like, I fired him, and everybody laughed at the courtroom because they were like, you fired him like you paid for him, because I didn't pay for him. It was like a court-appointed attorney, but that was his thing, bro. Every time he'd come in to see me, he's like, hey, you know, the government feels like you have very valuable information. I'm like, bro, I don't give a fuck about you or the government. Like, get the fuck out of here, you know?
Right.
Bro, he left one time from that meeting that I told him that. He was shaking with his suitcase, and I was like, what's wrong with you, bro? Like, why are you tripping like that? He's like, because you're going to kick my ass. And I was like, I'm not going to kick your ass. Just get the fuck out of here with that shit. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Like, I'm here for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Anytime I've been in the system, I've been in the system because of myself and nobody else.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Have you seen a shitload of people, like, from your area or just people that you previously were cool with who snitched? And, like, what's the fallout normally like?
It's crazy. It's everywhere, bro. Like, it's not just necessarily, you know, it's just everywhere. The world has changed so much nowadays, and it's like, man, that's why only thing to do now is basically fly straight, bro, because motherfuckers is out there and you don't know who's who, you don't know what's what, and it's like, you don't know what to do, bro. You don't know who to fucking confide in. You don't know who, like, is your boy. Like, it's just, it's out there, you know what I mean? People do that.
So you're paranoid?
I'm not paranoid. I just watch everything I do, everything I say, and who I put my trust into, because I already know people out here are phony, bro.
But when you look at the shit that you were doing in your teen years and shit, and then you think about it now from your adult perspective, and also how much the world has changed in the sense that we have seen a shitload of people snitching. We do have fucking cameras on every goddamn street, so if you shoot somebody these days, chances are they're just going to fucking keep going through these cameras. And see people get caught from having a phone in their pocket when they go shoot at somebody, et cetera. Like, nowadays, sometimes I'm reading the news, and I'm like, bro, anybody who's trying to live a life of crime, just do not do it these days. It's not possible. Like, there's too much information.
I'll be on the first 48.
Yeah, unless you really want to be like a rebel who doesn't have a phone and doesn't have social media and it completely is like off the grid, maybe then you'd have a chance. But that's just not how people are now either. Yeah, they want to do some shit and then also flex that they're that kind of person.
Right, right. It's walking cameras out here, bro. Like, everybody, it's like people feel the need to, you know, they see somebody getting beat up or something, they want to record it. Instead of jumping up and helping the person, it's like, let me get my likes on this Instagram post real quick first. Right. You know what I mean?
Like,
it's
like, I know a bunch of people who either got killed or overdosed, famous people and not that famous people. Mm-hmm. And I've seen them all dead on the internet because that's just people's reaction. Like, people that I was close to who died, and I got to see the video of them laid out in their fucking car bleeding out with a hole in their head multiple, like a whole bunch of times. It's kind of trippy that this is that consistent. The motherfuckers will always film this and put it online.
It's wild. People trip out on me because they're like, bro, like, all you post is food and weed. And I'm like, that's my life, bro. Like, what do you want me to do? And they're like, why do you always post that? I'm like, why do you always watch it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're watching it. You're inspired for something. You like what I'm eating or what I'm smoking, like, one or the other, because you're here, you know, faithfully every day. I see you on my timeline or on my, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it's like, that's what I trained myself to do. Like, I don't need to be posting anything else that's negative. This is what I do. You know, I smoke weed and I eat.
So, you get home from doing that Fed bit, and is this when you actually really decided you wanted to turn your life around? What's that look like?
I think this is when I kind of figured that I want to take the music serious and see where it goes. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I lived the whole life already. Like, you know what I'm saying? I've been shot. I've been to prison. I've been to juvenile. I've been pretty much everywhere you could imagine. And, you know, I'm not getting any younger. So music is basically my outlet for my my mind, for my family, if I want to start my family and keep, you know what I mean? Keep progressing. I have kids, you know what I mean? So at the end of the day, it's like, I want to be able to take care of them.
You've been having kids like all along through this whole story and shit when you first have a kid.
Yeah. 2007. Seven, because I ended up going in. Yeah, 2007 I went in. And right when I got to the feds, you know, the girl that I was with pulls up and she's like, I'm a week pregnant type shit. You know what I mean? And it was Holy fuck. So he was born while I was in the, you know, in the system or whatnot. That's my son, Joshua. And then I had another son. I named him Music Don. He happened a little bit after I came home from the feds. You know, I was involved with a female that was at the halfway house where I was at.
Wow.
And, yeah, we had a son, but, you know, she took off with him or whatnot. Then I have a baby girl that's 3 years old. She's a baby still. So, yeah, it's been like, you know, and they're from different mothers or whatnot. So it's like it's been a little rough for me, you know. But I want to be able to, what I was getting at was that I want to be able to take care of them with this music, with what I do, with myself and my life and everything that I'm, you know. Like I always tell everybody, I feel like it's a piggy bank that you just stuff. And I feel like eventually from stuffing this piggy bank, it's going to burst. You know what I mean? It's like only a certain amount of money could fit in there. Eventually it's going to bust, and then we got it. You know what I mean? So I always tell myself that, and I've been faithful to stuffing this piggy bank as much as I can to hopefully one day this shit just explode and we're good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like you realized when you got out that you just had to keep doing shit. But were you getting a reaction at first, or like did you feel like you were kind of just starting from scratch? I feel like I know so many people that when I said I was interviewing you, they didn't know who I was talking about, and then I showed them a picture and they're like, oh yes, I see this guy everywhere. Like you've been really grinding.
Right. Yeah, no, a lot of people tell me that, you know. A lot of people will be like, hey, I seen you such and such and such, what's your Instagram? And so I was like, okay, they know only what they see, basically, you know what I'm saying? And then when they get to talk to me, when they get to see, you know, a lot of people will see me and either be intimidated or not necessarily intimidated, they just might not be like, okay, that's not my cup of tea, you know what I'm saying? And then they talk to me and they see what my life's about, what I've been going through, like my whole struggle and everything, and they're like, they just immediately become attached, bro. I don't know how it is or why it is, but it's just like that. It's insane.
No, I mean, really, like, the way that you talk and shit, it's not like, you don't really get, like, a menacing vibe. Like, you're very, like, you're a smart guy and you're easy to talk to. It's almost like, you know, somebody who's a real dumbass, like, would just go through your life and just never change. It's like you kind of got into shit at a young age, and then but you were smart enough to realize, like, that you could do something more with yourself. So you have a different perspective, you know?
And the good thing about that, man, honestly, in all reality, is that my homies, they love me, they respect it, and they you know, they show love, and they're by my side. I don't want to say they're behind me because they're beside me, you know what I mean? And it's like, that's a good feeling, you know what I mean? To be able to have that love coming from your homies. Some people can't do that. Some people, it's like, nah, fuck that, you know? But with me, it tended to work out, you know what I mean? My homies love me, and I love them back. So it's like, man, all day, like, we're pushing at this dream together now, you know what I mean? And if I can help out a homie in the process, if he wants to, you know, join that positive note, then come on with it, you know?
For sure. So how do you actually start working on your career when you get out this time? And in terms of music, like, do you hit the ground running, or did you just kind of have to slowly start figuring shit out?
Yeah, kind of like, I mean, I honestly did hit the ground running. I was in the halfway house, and they only allow you a certain amount of time to get out of there. You have to have a job to get out. So I would say I'm going out job searching, which I was full of shit. I would you had to take them back, like, these business cards to let them know, look, I went to go look for a job here at this furniture store, here at this Burger King, here. You got to take them back business cards.
Okay.
So I would pay dudes to go get business cards for me, and I'll go studio and record. Because I knew that I had to get this shit done. Like, there was nothing that was going to stop me from doing what I had to do. So I was in these studio sessions. I knew what time I had to be back. I'll be back. I'll meet the guy in the corner, give me the business cards. Boom. Here you go. This is where I was searching at a job for today. They'll tell you, oh, we're going to call them. I'm like, that's fine. Tell them I said hi. Boom. Uh-huh. Here you go, you know? And that's how I knew that I was determined, was that I was risking my freedom again to actually go and do something positive. You know what I mean? Like, I'm recording music, I'm shooting a video, I'm that type of stuff. To me, was more worth getting violated for than for me getting something violated for something really that
right.
makes no sense. You know what I mean? Like, that made more sense to me, like, than anything. So I knew at that point that I was in for the long run, and then this was going to be a positive run. You know what I mean?
No offense, but where did they think that you were going to get a job? Because realistically, I don't think, like, Enterprise Rental Car is going to hire you. Like,
I'm telling you, they had faith. They had faith. They had a lot of faith. So I got to give them that. You know what I mean? Like, they definitely were. I mean, I guess it's just part of their job. They have to do that. You know what I mean?
Right,
so it was like, I'm sure some of them knew, like, oh, he wasn't looking for no job. Sometimes I would come in with bags from, like, certain stores in the mall, and they'll be like, like, oh, well, I stopped there for a second and got me a hot dog and got me some food. Like, it just, you know what I mean? But, you know, they would trip out because I had, you know, people trying to help me out with the music that I met, you know, from before in the system or whatnot. Some of these were wealthy people, you know what I mean? And they offered their hand to help me get my foot in the door with this music. And I would have Bentley's pulling up to the halfway house to pick me up, and you know, the staff would be like, hey, like, you're living above your means over here, bro. And I'm like, bro, that's not my car. Like, it'd be different if I'm pulling up parking this right here in your driveway. Like, I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, if they're picking me up, I can't tell somebody, hey, don't bring your car that you own.
The last thing you want is the employee at the halfway house thinking that you're driving around in a Bentley, because then they're just gonna be like, man, fuck this guy. Let's
That's how they were. But some of them were happy, like, to see it. You know, I gotta give them, you know, there was certain ones that would be like, that's right, get it, you know. And then there was the ones that you could see that little bit of envy, that they'll come to my cell or whatever you want to call it, because we had a room with like six different people in the halfway house, where they'll come and look under your bunk and see if you got any contraband, shit like that. Like, so I would notice the ones that were kind of easy, because they would see that we're doing decent, and then I would see the ones that would be like, oh, no, fuck this guy. Like, he's doing too much. He's got to be doing something illegal. But they would come and search and find nothing, because I wasn't doing shit, you know what I mean, but music, you know what I mean? So it's like, okay, cool, you look all you want. Look for what you're trying to find, and, you know, good luck.
So did you start doing numbers? Like, how did you start putting your stuff out? Because I feel like you've gone viral on Worldstar a couple times, right?
We've had a couple videos on Worldstar. We took one off, I believe.
Just, really? How come?
Yeah. I honestly forgot. I think it was just certain things in the video didn't match up, you know what I mean? So we kind of wanted to take it down. We took it down. We were supposed to put it back up, but the same dude that shot my video, I couldn't get in contact with him or something like that, so we didn't mess with it, you know? Yeah, like, I think that just with my social media, it's funny because I got to a certain point on my Instagram before where I was, like, maybe at 14,000-15,000 followers, and I lost my page. Like, somebody hacked it or whatnot, whatever happened, it was lost. And I told myself, you know what, I'm not even going to do this Instagram shit again. It's too hard to gain these followers. People don't give a shit, you know what I mean? Like, you got to really be out here doing backflips for people to be like, oh, hey, look at this guy. Like, you know what I mean? And I said, you know what, I'm going to give it one more try. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So I made a new Instagram. I started doing videos of myself just rapping. Like, because I was, like I said, I was dealing with the whole ankle monitor and shit. So it was hard for me to keep the people's attention for so long with only throwback selfies that I was posting. I couldn't go nowhere. So I wasn't really doing shit but staying home. So I had my homie coming and recording me at the house, like on the table just like this. We were recording music. He was sitting there with, you know, and he would make it sound like if we were in the studio. So it sounded good. So I said, you know what? I'm going to do this until I get off. But the thing was keeping the people's attention, the people on Instagram, because they don't want to just keep seeing throwback pictures. Like, I've seen this picture already. I've seen it, you know what I'm saying? So I didn't have no way of keeping their focus. So I started doing these rap videos of myself just doing rap. And it was crazy because I had like maybe 3,000 followers, but my views on these songs were getting like 50,000-60,000, and I'm like, how, if I have 3,000 people that follow me, like, where are these songs going that these people are all just seeing them? So I just kept doing it, you know, and then I would take some down and put a different one up just to see how, like, what is it called, like the algorithm. Like, I would try to see how, what is it, that is it a certain time that I have to post, is it a certain thing, like, you know what I mean? So I think I kind of learned it more or less what times, and then after that I stopped giving a shit. I just started posting shit whenever I wanted, and they kept going, like, and my you know, my following is still pushing, still moving up, you know.
I mean, it's kind of a gift, especially when you think that, like, you know, you started getting locked up before there really was social media, and then you've really, like, only been, like, free for a couple of periods of social media. It's like, if I were, like, to just be dropped down on Earth right now and told, hey, here's Instagram, I mean, what are the odds that I'm going to be able to figure out how the fuck to really actually utilize this platform? I feel like it's only because I've been using it for 10 years that I know how to go do it properly. You know, it must have been kind of overwhelming at one point.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I didn't even know how to use the phone when I came home. I'm sitting there looking at it like, what does this mean? What does this mean? How do you do this? Like, how do I turn it on? Like, you know what I mean? Right. It was rough. But I mean, it kind of like, I feel like anything, bro. Once you learn, it's like, it's up to you to keep, you know, going with it. Like, if you like it, then do it.
Right.
Go for it. So I, you know, I kind of caught the wave of how everything worked. I started off with the whole Facebook stuff, and Facebook kind of was too family orientated for me. Like, you know, I was like, the Instagram was just pictures. So I said, okay, I could do this, you know.
Right.
And it worked, and you know, it started working to my benefit too, especially after, you know, I started, you know, we built The Effort, which is my record label along with my boy right here.
Right.
You know, we started that, and it's been like all business. You know what I mean? Like, now we got an LLC. We got, you know, everything in place. Got a whole bunch of stuff going on. We've been on CNN, you know what I mean, with Anthony Bourdain. A lot of stuff through my brother, Stevan Oreo, you know, back to my boy. Like, he's put us in positions that only he could have done.
He's really kind of looked out for you. Like, because I was thinking, I'm like, there's not, you know, most rappers to come up from the underground and stuff, at a certain point, unless they just have like one song that's going super crazy or whatever, usually like they have to, like, bigger rappers will end up looking out for them,
yeah,
and stuff.
Pull them out.
And Esteban's kind of that for you. Like, he's really kind of helped you out a lot.
Yeah, he's definitely been a big, you know, help in our journey right here. You know what I'm saying? He's got us to places that I'm sure that we probably wouldn't have been able to without him. You know what I mean? And he's hella appreciated for that. You know, I got tracks with my boy Yellow Wolf now, you know what I'm saying? And that's all part of that. Like, Esteban, you know, plugged us up, brought Yellow Wolf to my neighborhood, and Yellow Wolf had a hell of a time, and he loved my homies loved him. And you know, that wasn't Esteban saying, hey, do a song with him. Like, Esteban didn't even mention anything. He didn't even know I did music, but it was the love and the, you know what I mean, relationship that we built that day that just carried us on. Now I got two tracks with Yellow Wolf now, you know?
Right.
I got two tracks with China Mac. Like, I got, you know, all these things that are starting to come in place. Like, it's really a blessing and really dope, you know?
That's dope, yeah. I mean, in terms of, like, what kind of music you make, how would you describe it to somebody who hasn't heard you, and what do you aspire to do when you do make a song?
Like, I mean, I do gangster rap, basically. You know, I don't sit here and get into the whole Chicano rap or the, you know, that type of stuff. Like, I do gangster rap. It's like, if you're a Chicano or you're a black or you're a white and you like it, that's what I do. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, that's what I, you know, I learned to listen to. Like, I grew up listening to his gangster rap. You know what I mean? It really didn't matter who it was coming from. It was like, if it sounded good and that's what made my head bob to the music, like, I'll definitely listen to that. So that's how I feel about that, you know what I mean? Like, with myself, like, I do gangster rap, and that's what I do.
Right. It's kind of interesting, because, like, I feel like you talk about stuff in the music that you probably wouldn't sit here and talk about in an interview. Like, you kind of go more into your past or like, you know, what the gangster lifestyle is all actually like. Like, to a certain extent, it would feel like you were snitching on yourself if you said some of that shit in an interview, but in the music, you can just kind of let this out in a different way,
I
right?
I feel like in my music, I talk about myself. Like, I don't mention other people. I don't, you know, throw nobody under the bus ever. Myself, I talk about what I've been through, my struggle, and that's why I kind of explain as well, is that I'm not, you know, some people will sit there and be like, oh, he's glorifying that lifestyle, or he's this. And at the same time, it's like, no, this is me telling my story, what I've already did time for, what I've already been through. And for the kids to see and say, hey, if that's, you're gonna go through all that to be, you know, a gang member or to be where he's at now, like, this is what I gotta go through. So I'm kind of explaining to them, like, now you got a choice. This, you could do all this and end up wherever it is. It might lead you. It might not lead you where I'm at. It might lead you somewhere else. So you got to kind of, you know, play that out by yourself. But at the same time, I'm trying to give knowledge to people, like, to understand, like, okay, look, there's other outlets out there, you know what I'm saying? Music is definitely one of them, and I chose, that's what I chose to do, you know? Like I said, if I speak about something, it's speaking about myself and nobody else, basically, you know what I mean? I'm talking about my own life that I've lived and, you know, everything that I've been through. Mainly it's talking about my, you know, my me getting shot, me doing time, and the rest is all smoking weed. It's just the normal stuff, but at the end of the day, I put it in a form where it's a story that people like that shit. You know what I mean? People, they're drawn to it because it's like some people have lived that, and then there's some people that haven't but are intrigued by it. You know what I mean? So it's like it's a win-win situation, especially if you're not throwing somebody under the bus or putting people on blast and you're not getting nobody in trouble in the process of you doing what you're doing.
That's one of the easiest ways to blow up in rap is basically to air out another rapper or to say, hey, fuck this hood, fuck all this shit. We've seen a million rappers, like, basically, like, if you put out a song right now dissing some neighborhood or whatever, I mean, millions and millions of views, no problem. Right. You know that.
Yeah, no.
What keeps you from, like, because you're from the old school to a certain degree, right?
Yeah, I just feel like, that's giving people too much credit. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I first started rapping, then, yeah, I might have tried that, you know what I mean, and tried to start. But growing up and me now seeing how much different my music is from other people's music, it's like I don't feel like I even need to do that. You know what I mean? I feel like I let my lyrics and my music speak for itself, and that's what it's been doing. And pushing me further above in the game has been only because of my music and, like you said, because of help that we get, you know what I mean? Because my brother Esteban recognizes, you know, real love and support and real LA street stuff. You know what I'm saying?
If you, you know, had a show and you just happened to be talking to a young fan, you know, say there's like a 15-year-old kid who is fucking with your music, and you look at him and you see yourself when you were 15, and he's kind of at a crossroads, like he fucking with the gangster lifestyle, but maybe he's still in school and shit. Like, how do you approach a conversation with him, given that you want better for him than what you have, but you also understand that he's in the same situation you were, and he wants to, you know, have support from a network of people and stuff. He don't want to feel like he's alone in the streets. Right. How do you speak to him?
Well, it's crazy you ask that, because I a couple years back, you know, when I was home from the feds or whatnot, I was going to the schools and talking to kids, at the schools, through this company that I used to work for. They would have us, you know, on our little free time that we would have, they would take us to schools to go chop it up with the kids. And, you know, I would basically explain to them, like, at the end of the day, there's a different way to go about everything. Like, at the end of the day, there's somebody to answer to when it comes to, like, you're in class, your teacher got the last say so. So if you're sitting there talking or bullshitting and she says, hey, be quiet, instead of, you know, actually arguing with her or going back and forth, just be quiet and you won. Mm. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's like they're always going to win. Mm. So you don't want to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I would be in the system. It's so funny because, you know, sometimes the sergeants or whoever would walk in and be like, hey, how long you been here? I've been here 3 years. Damn, like, why haven't I seen you? Like, do you got any write-ups? Have you been, you know? Nope, I don't got none.
You figured that out early on?
You had to. You know what I mean? It's like that's how you get through your system time without actually fucking getting yourself in more bullshit.
Thing that I wish I got as a kid is, like, just don't put yourself in these situations of getting in trouble from doing some loud ass shit. If you're gonna get in trouble, have it be because you were doing some fucking criminal mastermind shit behind the scenes that you just somehow ended up getting popped for. But, like, just making shit hot for yourself is, like the ultimate way, if you want to finesse your way through high school and shit, is do good in school, make it so your parents don't give a fuck about, like, aren't worried about you because you actually are getting that shit done, and then take all the rest of your time and actually be able to do whatever. And meanwhile, the heat is off you because you are getting your shit done. Like,
stay,
I mean,
out the way.
That's the smarter way to handle it.
Yeah, when I first got to, like, the system, you know, like, one of my boys that was, you know, also in prison with me, you know, because I ended up going, like, straight to a level 3, and I later on I went to a level 4, but you start at a level 1, 2, or, like, it goes like that, you know. That's the severities of your crime or how much time you got. Like, they got levels, you know. So I started off in the level 3, and, you know, I kind of liked the structure of the program, you know what I mean, the way things ran. Like, it was, you know, you feel like you got solid people around you, so that's the type of time you want to do. And, you know, a lot of people would be like, oh, you know, to stay on this level, you gotta get write-ups. You have to get in trouble, like, because if not, your points are gonna drop and they're gonna send you to a level one or a level two where people are doing stuff that you're like, oh shit, you know what I mean? This ain't the program that I was taught. So that being said, you know, the homies were telling me, oh, you need to get in trouble type shit. But then there was one homie that said, nah, don't get in trouble, bro. The trouble's gonna come to you. Don't even go look for it, because, you know, that's just going to add more and more bullshit to your shit. So just let it come, and it'll come to you. And that's what happened. I took that advice, bro. You know what I'm saying? And the trouble did come regardless. So it's like you didn't have to actually go out there and look for the bullshit. It's going to happen regardless. You know, it's part of being in the system, part of life.
I feel you.
You know?
What about your brand? Effort is how it's said?
Yeah, it's not
EF Fort. Okay.
Well, it's the effort, right? It's effort music. But at the same time, it's the F Fort.
Got you.
So I did it like that. So where, you know what I mean?
It's, you got not it on necessary. Your face, right, too. It's on the side that they can't really see as well. Right. But when did you come up with the brand name? And your homie has a tattoo on his head, too. So right. You guys take this real serious, huh?
Yeah, well, that's all we, you know, we're putting everything into the effort music. And it's like everything requires effort. Anything else is just effortless. You know what I mean? It's like I don't understand when people be like, oh, you know, I did this and that, like with no effort type shit. Like, nah. There's no such thing as that, bro. Like, to get up and get a glass of water, you got to put effort. It's not going to walk to you. You know what I mean? Like, everything requires effort. And I look at it like, at the same time, it's something that my homies can be proud of because, you know, we're from the F.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So at the same time, it's something, it's an outlet. You know what I mean? So that they, you know, they can't say that I'm out here representing my gang with this. This is my record label.
So you were really thinking about that when you named it? Like, well, I want to make sure that they don't think that this is like me straight creating a whole new gang.
Right, you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, it's like somebody told me, you need to do a mixtape called The Effort. And then they just basically said, they didn't tell me about this whole little X in the middle. They just said, do The Effort, but at the same time, it's the F4. And I'm like, okay, but I'm going to put something to separate that. Because we're a fort. We're a family. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I feel like that's, you know, it don't get more positive than that, man. Trying to gain, you know, people to follow your positive journey. Like, you, there's no, how can you hate on that? You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you know, me and my boy, that's all we do is put out positive stuff now, you know? And I mean, and it's like, it's been working for us.
That's what's up. No, definitely. We see the growth. And is this a business that you are involved with or something?
Yeah, this is the Billionaire Hemp Wraps. So we have a endorsement deal with Billionaire Hemp Wraps. They're really good. These are tobacco free. They're making my actual face. They're making a few different flavors with my, that are gonna have my face on them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so it's gonna be like Baldacci Black and Baldacci Gold.
Oh, that's what's up.
Yeah, it's gonna be sick. It should be coming soon. Like, that's another thing that's a positive thing going on in my life. It's like I don't see a lot of people, even big names, that have that. You know what I mean? But, I mean, God is good, bro.
At this point, your face tattoos are kind of like your real signature. Like, you kind of, like, even, like, referencing it on the doll and shit like that. Like, has there ever been a time that you regretted getting that many face tattoos? And how do you think about it now? You still get tattoos now?
Right. Yeah, no, I still do. They just hurt a lot more now. Before, it was like a piece of cake. Now it's like, damn, you're almost done. You know what I mean? Like, type shit. It that really did change. But I don't regret any of them. You know, I just feel like if there's one there that I don't need, I could stamp over it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like a canvas now. You know what I mean? I basically did this to myself. But at the end of the day, now I feel like we're branding this. Like, it's not something that was done for nothing. You know what I mean? Like, though I'm full of gang tattoos and I'm from a gang, I'll never say that I'm not. You know what I mean? Like, that's, at the end of the day, I'm a gang member that's out here doing positive things. I'm not sitting there running around doing the bullshit I did when I was a kid.
Right.
I'm doing positive things. So, like I say, how can we hate on that?
No, definitely. Do you feel like, are you still on parole or probation or whatever the fuck it is, or anything like that? You're a free man now?
I'm free. I'm off all of that now. I just been,
that's dope.
That was my main thing too. That was my problem. I couldn't sign no deals with no labels. I couldn't do nothing because of the federal parole. Like,
really?
The federal
parole, you can't sign a record deal?
They, unless, like, say these people are telling you they're gonna give you $50,000 to be recording in the studio. I had a probation officer that, you know, he had it out for me. He, that it seemed, I'm, you know, I'm not, I don't even want to say that he did, but to me it seemed that way, you know. But you know, I brought him a couple of like contracts, you know what I mean? And basically he would tell me, look, if they're not offering you money or telling you they're going to pay you this much, because some contracts would say we're going to attempt to make this much with this and that. You know, they wouldn't give you the money up front.
But you had to ask him just to sign a contract.
Oh, yeah. It had to go through him. Like, for my name couldn't be on nothing unless the probation office or them knew about it, because they would definitely run upon you and take you. They took me back for, they violated me for making an album.
Really?
While I was on probation, yeah. They
violated just for making an album, not because of anything in particular you said or whatever?
You know, my probation officer tried to use that, but the judge, she threw it out because she was like, man, you're talking about, you brought him here on a different type of violation. Right. Now you're bringing this up while we're in court. Nah, like, it's not going to fly, you know? But he's like, oh, but he talks about this and this and that. So then the attorney and people on my side were like, oh, so you say you know his music? Like, I know every single song. Okay, so you know this song? Yes, we know this song. Why didn't you bring that song up when he's talking about the struggle, his family, like the positive stuff? Oh, I didn't feel it was necessary. That was like the key word for my judge to just be like, you didn't feel it was necessary. Well, I don't feel the rest of this is necessary, so we're throwing this out type right. shit, you know? But it was attempted. The violation was definitely attempted. Like, they wanted to violate me for that, you know?
Yeah.
Just so, didn't. It came out of my favor, you know?
What do you do now to stay out of trouble? You just, like, really avoid putting yourself in these kind of situations? Do you still feel like you go back to the hood and stuff? You just try to keep your nose clean? Or
yeah, I keep myself out the way, you know what I'm saying? I definitely stop by my area. Like, you know, that's my people right there. Like, I can never be taken from there. Like, at the end of the day, it's like they're still my people, like. But I don't go over there and hang out the way I did when I was a kid. Like, if I
stand
go there,
on the corner for 8 hours,
yeah, I can't do
too
hot,
that, right?
You know, none of that is going down no more. Like, I was a kid when I did that. So now it's like I stop by, I say what's up to my people, show love, you know what I mean? Get some flicks, get some food, and then, you know, I go about my business. And it's back to my work, back to me in that box and trying to figure out something positive to get done to make these people continue seeing that I'm out here chasing a different dream, you know?
Definitely. Yeah, it's motivational, man, for real. And I feel like, you know, probably, hopefully a lot of people will see this interview and it'll fill in the blanks that they, like, right. they have heard some songs and they seen you with the face tattoos and shit, but they maybe didn't necessarily know what you really were. You know, I hope this interview opened some doors for you. That'd be, like, the best thing that I could imagine. Yeah.
Right. No, thank you, man. I appreciate you guys having me here. Like, it's definitely a blessing, and it feels like it's a... another step in my career, man. I just feel like everything that we get done and that we accomplish is a better day.
Definitely, man.
You know?
Yeah, it's been inspirational. Anything that they should keep an eye out for that's dropping in the near future?
Yeah, I got my birthday's on Saturday, on February 13th. Oh, I'm actually
happy
dropping
birthday.
Thank you.
Look at that.
I'm actually dropping a video that we just shot with China Mac, my boy Misfit Soto, shot by Concrete. So we got that coming. Just so many different things, man. These hemp raps, like, I'm definitely. I got a documentary with Esteban Oreo too that's gonna be coming out. It's about my life.
Really?
Yeah, because we came out on LA Originals on Netflix with him.
That was a big look for you. That's probably like a large percentage of people when they say, yeah, oh, I know that guy. That's probably a lot.
Where
it
came
that's
from.
The
yeah.
main thing they think
and,
of.
And this is like a follow up to it. Like, he's gonna, you know, put it all together. We already shot basically everything already. A lot of interviews in the documentary, like a lot of my people, like, you know, they grew up with me, they know me since I was a kid, like, just really good looks, you know what I mean? And Esteban definitely made that happen again, you know what I mean? So that should be coming soon as well.
Definitely. Did you get most of your tattoos done in prison, or have you been tattooed by Cartoon?
No, I haven't got tattooed by Cartoon, but he definitely said that he will eventually, so we're waiting to see when we get around to that.
What kind of space do you have left? You got anything?
Man, we could 4x4 some shit. I ain't even tripping, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, if I got space, it's like on my legs.
I still got my whole back, and I was thinking about tapping in with him for that, but then also that's a lot to bite off right now.
Right. Yeah,
walking around with a bloody ass back for a week or two would be kind of shitty.
Yeah, see, the good thing about it in prison is like they could only tattoo for like a couple hours, and then it's like, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. They'll go back to, you know, and then they come, you run into them again, it's like, hey, let's do that other piece, and it's like piece by piece. So you can't just sit there and complete your whole bag, you know what I mean? Yeah. When you can out here. Like.
But like for me, like timing wise, that is how I'd want to do it, is be right. Like, all right, I'm going to pop a Percocet or two and yeah. I'm going to get my whole fucking bag done. Yeah, like, you mean, let's do 10 hours right now and I'm going to be sessions. Fucking passed out and let's right. get this shit done. Yeah.
Yeah, now you have to, man. That's sometimes that's the best way to go about it, you know?
Yeah.
Get it out the way.
For real.
Well, yeah.
All right, Baldacci, man. It was great having you on the podcast. Yeah. I appreciate your time, man.
Thank you so much, bro. For real. It was a blessing, man.
Baldacci.
Thank you.
No Jumper. Coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. Like, comment, subscribe, and hit up nojumper.com if you want to support. Appreciate all you guys. And follow him on Instagram as well. It's on the screen.
Yeah. Face of Los Angeles out here with my boy Adam22, No Jumper.
Hey. Appreciate you, man.